One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, here in the 1030 The Voice Studios every day, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Don't forget our new-ish time, not so new anymore, but new time, 9 to 10. We talk about the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future and envision, debate, and discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And it's good to be back in the saddle after a week away. I think Monday it felt like, hey, what are we doing? Tuesday I was like, oh, I know what I'm doing. And today I feel fully back in the saddle. But Tucson, thank you for listening. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to engage in our conversation today. And lately I've been doing shorter one or two segment interviews. Every now and again, I'll go back to a kind of a longer format that I had done for a while. And that's what we're going to do today, because I want to talk about an issue that is a big-time issue in America, a big-time issue in Tucson and Arizona. And I'm going to do it with a friend of mine that I spent a week with last week in San Antonio and Austin. We went to the great state of Texas on a housing study tour, looking at issues of housing affordability, supply, displacement, and gentrification. And I want to walk through that a little bit and report back on that, because as you know, if you listen to even just a week of my shows, I'm not a shock jock, and I rarely use the word I'm about to use with anything. I only use it when I mean it, and that word is crisis, right? You can throw that word around. We have a crisis. We've almost thrown it around so much about so many things, nothing's a crisis anymore. Well, I'm careful of that. What we heard from places like Austin and San Antonio is that America has a crisis of housing, a crisis of supply, a crisis of affordability, and a crisis of accessibility. And if you live in a place like Austin, you are living that reality every day. If you're living in a place like San Antonio or Tucson, it's a little bit more subtle. But when you look at cities that are 10, 15, 20 years ahead of our growth curve, if you will, you can see the signs. And if you're not careful to act on them, there is a path that most American cities are going down, where inaccessibility and inaffordability is creating a poor quality of life that is creating exoduses out, right? It's why the Midwest and Sunbelt cities right now are seeing such a growth of population, because the coasts and larger cities are losing so many people because of housing. And more research is coming out about how, you know, we talk about taxes and jobs and things like that. That's surface. Below the surface that no one's talking about enough yet, even though we do here in Tucson, is housing, accessibility, and affordability. So Andres Portela from Southwest for Housing Council and other projects we work on together is in studio today to debrief and talk about it. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Zach. Let me say that fair housing is affordability, and affordable housing is a part of fair housing. It is potentially a fair housing issue, and that's why we're trying to champion a cause for a source of income protection for the city of Tucson. And all that basically means is if someone goes to their housing provider with a alternative source of income, they would be able to get that housing.
Gotcha. I wanted to set this up because you and I were talking about this before we got into studio, that there's a lot of kind of narrative and stereotype around the issue of housing. When we were on the trip together, we talked a little bit about one of the rare few Republican mayors of any major American city, most American cities. And we should do a show on why this is. I read an interesting article about how the last 100 of years shaped politics and geography, right? And how the Industrial Revolution shaped cities and how that shapes politics today. Super interesting stuff. But a lot of cities are blue and are led by Democratic mayors. And so there's very few major cities that are led by center-right or conservative mayors. But there's a major city that's run by a Republican, and it's hard to believe that it's even happening in this state. But California, San Diego, has a Republican mayor. And one of the signature things he's doing in San Diego is tackling the housing crisis, because they've got a big one out in San Diego, one of the least affordable places in the entire country. And so this is not a Democratic or Republican issue, right, Andres? This is a very localized issue that crosses a lot of lines that divide other stuff. Very policy-oriented challenges we have to face on this, right?
If there's anything we learned from this trip, is it's not a localized issue. We saw studies from Austin, Baltimore, many Minneapolis, all of these different places. And what we came to the conclusion was is that so many people are trying to tackle the issue of affordable housing, but also displacement. And that was the primary focus of what we were sent to Austin and San Antonio to look at. We wanted to figure out, does Tucson have a displacement issue or a gentrification issue? And I'm not going to go too much into the gentrification, but affordable housing in the Tucson market is achievable. We just have to know what tools are available to us, because I feel like there are a few tools, but I feel like, again, this is not a bipartisan issue. This is pretty much an everyone issue.
I want to touch on that really quick before we go to our first break. We were also talking about this, though, real fast, that the current pace of building housing in America right now is not even hitting demand. Even though supply and affordability does not solve necessarily displacement issues, we learned that on the trip pretty quickly last week, but the U.S. is currently building 370,000 units less than what it needs to be per year. It needs to be building 370,000 units more per year across the country to keep up with the demand. That's a pretty staggering number, considering that we only added 1.25 million housing units in 2017. So what is that, about a third? We were 33% short of what we needed to be building in this country. Pretty crazy. I want to get your thoughts on this before we go to break. This will, I think, set it up, Andres. Is I kind of broke it down into three ideas when it comes to housing. I don't know if you agree, and it's probably even more fun conversation if you don't. But I see there's an issue of affordability, which I categorize as, do you have the ability to enter the neighborhood or community of your choice or the housing market, right? Is housing accessible enough price-wise that you can buy into it? Accessibility, affordability. Displacement, I think, deals with the right to remain, right? If you're living in a community and you're on a fixed income or you are a lower socioeconomic status, is development and building of these units really around you happening in a way that you can remain in that neighborhood? And then gentrification, not to oversimplify it, I think, is the cultural component. A lot of times development comes with an overhauled cultural change. And I think we're seeing that when you don't have that diversity of people and incomes and backgrounds and cultures in a community, it's a weaker community overall. I think there's three themes to tackle there. Was that your sense coming away from that trip last week?
Yeah, affordability, displacement, and gentrification were the three things that I thought were probably the biggest overarching themes. But I also had some subgroups underneath them. I had scalability, equity, and growth. A lot of cities are trying to figure out the growth. I mean, they're actively doing the growth, and we saw that in Austin. Their growth is at a rate that they can't keep up with. Scalability is probably one of their biggest issues, because they're trying to figure out the density complexity, and they're trying to figure out how to get people housed, but they haven't figured out how to do it to scale it at a rate that they can catch up with. But equity, and they're trying to tackle that with their chief equity officer, but I do not
in
see...
In San Antonio.
Yeah, in San Antonio. I'm pretty sure Austin had one, but we didn't have the chance to meet them. But affordability, it goes hand in hand with equity. Displacement also goes hand in hand with equity, and same with gentrification. So I felt those three themes were like the three takeaways for me, but I had to get something right underneath them.
When we come back from the break, Andres, here on 10:30 The Voice, let's talk about some of your reflections on both cities, what you saw in Austin and San Antonio. A lot of we hear in Tucson that Tucson could be the next Austin, and that Tucson and San Antonio are pretty close as it is. I want to know what your thoughts are on those comparisons and what that means for Tucson. We'll be right back after the break. Tucson, welcome back to the show. This is the Creative City Show on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, where every day we talk about big issues for Tucson. And a couple months ago, and Andres will talk about this as well, city leadership said, look, we need to stay ahead of this issue. Major American cities are facing housing shortages, housing affordability challenges, challenges where longtime homeowners can no longer stay and live in place. This creates just massive public services challenges. It displaces problems, it doesn't solve problems. We look at cities like Austin and San Antonio, kind of our future in a way. And so our city leadership in Tucson is really looking at these issues. And what happened next, Andres?
Well, what do you mean what happened next?
Well, we met with with the city. And
yeah, as a collective of neighborhood coalitions, we got together and we said, hey, this is an issue, you should be focusing on it, to the city manager and other people in local government. And they responded, they gave us as a displacement task force. And then we met with them one more time because it seems like they're very willing to talk. And so we met with them one more time. We invited them into our space. We talked about this whole overarching theme of displacement and gentrification. And they were extremely open to studying it further. And they said, well, we're going to send some city employees to Austin and San Antonio and see what they're doing. And from there, there was a demand from our group, our collective, to say, let's get some of our people there because we need community representation. That was pretty much the demand. And once we got community representation, I mean, once they said yes, which was less than a week later, Zach and I were planning a trip less than a week later. So it's like a week happened. They said yes. And a week after that, they're saying, go ahead and let's go. So I want to say thank you to the city of Tucson for first stating that there is an issue of displacement. And then the Barrio Neighborhood Coalition, which is something that we're a part of. Thank you for allowing us to have representation on this trip. And then this thanks goes out to Zach because I got to spend a week with Zach and get to understand some of his thoughts around smart growth and scalability and all of these things that encompass community. But I also got to spend the week with the city planner and then other city staff, like the management advisor to the city manager's office. I think those two perspectives were more than just a great look into the future. I think their perspectives really just laid out where we were and what was feasible, what is scalable, what does it actually look like. And so I was super grateful that we had the opportunity to go out there and study this all together.
For sure. Andres, we've got about 8-9 minutes left before we head to bottom of the hour news and updates. Let's bring this a little bit maybe more at the ground level. You know, Austin is a city that that seems to and has done everything kind of right when it comes to large companies moving there, tech startups. It's obviously the capital of Texas, so it feeds off of that energy. University of Texas is there. A lot of people say Austin is the potential future of Tucson, or that Tucson could be the next Austin. Great music scene, great food scene, South by Southwest, you know, major international conference. I mean, it just seems to check all of the boxes, and I think in many ways it does. What are some of the kind of challenging policy themes that you think that we saw out there when it comes to affordability, to housing, to displacement? What's kind of the underbelly of that kind of success if you're not careful?
One of the biggest issues I found with going out there, they bond out of every tricky situation that they really get in, and they have the voter base to actually do that. And I kind of believe that sort of thought is available to us in Tucson, but I hope that we wouldn't do it. Another thing that I kind of was looking for and yearning for in the heart of Austin was the cultural aspect. Austin is sold as a city with a lot of heart, culture, and growth, but what you really saw was a lot of growth. Right when you come in and out of downtown, you can see the new apartments for Oracle. You can see all of these big tech hubs. You can drive basically through these communities. And then when you get into the core of the city, you see a lot of industrial and a lot of new, but you really miss out on that old time nostalgia, which you get in San Antonio. And so if I could say that Tucson is excelling, we excel at the heart and culture part of it. What I want us to do next is to start to understand that density is not a bad thing, but also that we can scale the city with the acknowledgement of city and community and nonprofit. I think one of the best things that I got to see was how cities are grown based off the future planning. We had the opportunity to go to this project called the Miller House, and it's spelled Miller, but it's Miller. Maybe it's a Texas thing, but we got to go out there and see this community that was built out.
Very master planned.
Yeah, it was very thoughtful and intention filled. And what it was is it made cities more walkable. And I think that's a goal that a lot of community wants. They want to be able to walk to their local grocery store. They want to be able to walk to the library. They want to be able to walk to the movie theater. And this community essentially had that. And the way they had that was working with nonprofits, working with community leaders, and working with the business community. And so if there's another thing that I can say, Tucson, let's look forward to this. Let's look forward to working with business, nonprofit, as well as city. I think there's a level of distrust that goes on, and it may or may not be with purpose. But I feel like in order for us to grow as a city and a community, we have to acknowledge that we're all different, coming with different perspectives. perspectives, but our ultimate goal is to see the success of City.
This is a great, I think, segue to maybe even something a little bit down the road in our interview, but I want to start this conversation with you. This has been rattling around in my head. We can start it before we go to break. Maybe we'll finish it. We'll see. Is so Austin has grown quite a bit, and now it's in a position where it has, so the bond you mentioned was $250 million. The voters approved a $250 million bond to basically provide
for... That's the most recent bond. I think it's like almost $1 billion in bonds over the last 10 years.
It's crazy.
Go ahead.
And that bond is going towards land banking, right? For the city to buy up land so that it can put more affordable units on it. It's bonding for straight up building affordable housing. Big enough problem that the whole area of Austin said, hey, we got to work on this. But whether it's that issue or like inclusionary housing, in other words, incentivizing development to add in more affordable units as they're developing. For instance, if the zoning says, well, you can build 5 stories, the city is empowered to say, look, we'll let you build 7 if you incorporate 20 affordable housing units for this percentage of median family income. Because Arizona, Tennessee, and Texas are the 3 states in the union that have banned inclusionary zoning, which is mandated. Inclusionary housing is more incentive-based. I'm taking the long way around to say it felt to me like Austin can do those things. Austin can solve its problems in a way because it has the economic engine to do so. And I felt like some of the lessons we learned there don't necessarily apply to Tucson because we just don't have the money base to do it. And I fear that that's true for a lot of the things that we tackle in Tucson, is we're not really able to make a difference and move the needle on those things because we haven't gotten our economic engine up where it needs to be. I think we've got 2 minutes. You have a thought on that? Am I off track or what do you think?
No, I think you're on track, but I think it's a little bit more simple than that. I think we really haven't figured out that community has a lot of power in all of this, and the ideas need to come from somewhere. It needs to come from more than just city. What we do is we frequently rely on just city to come up with these ideas, and we don't have that sit down process. And what I found is throughout all of these studies, there were at least 15 different perspectives from just community members, nonprofits, government officials. I think we're at a really important time in which we can use this tornado as kind of just like a reset period. And so we're past gentrification or displacement, but we're right there at the edge of it where we can catch it before it happens. And how does that happen? Through basically think tank.
Andres, we have a caller on the line. Carl called in at 790-2040. It looks like Carl has lived in Austin and wanted to share some thoughts. Carl, I appreciate you listening and calling in.
Yeah, now it's been quite a while since I've lived in Austin, but the thing is the demographics and the political landscape of Austin have changed drastically in the past 15 years with all of the various California folks and liberal Democrats moving in. And so that has driven the major change there. And it doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to make it through the state capitol because they could very easily step in and say, no, we're not going to allow that sort of thing statewide.
Yeah, we heard that quite a bit. We heard that the legislature there quashes a lot of things. And we also heard, hey, we got a lot of Californians coming in. We heard that a lot.
Yep. It made it seem like it was very reactionary. So like for every move forward that Austin would take, the state would create barriers for them. And they've kind of preempted that in Arizona.
Carl, okay, let's be careful about that because moving forward is not necessarily what they want.
Carl, I appreciate your call. We are at hard break. We'll see you on the other side of the bottom of the hour news. Tucson, welcome back to the show, the Creative City Show here on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. And we're talking about the trip that Andres and I took, my guests in studio today, and a few others to Austin and San Antonio last week to look at how as cities grow and develop, which I contest they need to, how do we make sure that there's enough housing supply? How do we make sure that neighborhoods and families and people who've lived in areas for a while get to stay there and benefit from the growth? And how do we make sure that we don't lose our heart and soul as communities? And Siri doesn't understand, and many people don't. This is a hard hard issue to figure out. But we kind of spent a week drinking out of a fire hydrant, I would say.
And that's what it felt like.
And I'm still processing it. Andres, we, in both cities, San Antonio and Austin, we met with community land trust development groups. We met with neighborhood groups. We met with academics from the University of Texas. We met with city staff. We met with housing commissions. We met with really across the spectrum. Were there any common themes or common items or solutions that you heard on this issue?
There were two phrases that I felt used a lot throughout all of this, and it was cups of coffee, because we had so many cups of coffee from meeting people places, but also the level of collaboration. I always, and I saw this fairly often, a lot of people were arguing either for or against more collaboration. And you see it from the city, from cities like San Antonio and Austin, who basically, let me jump backwards. Let me go to, like, for example, we, myself and Corin from the planning and zoning got to go to a tiny house community. This tiny house community was basically for homeless who have been basically just kicked out of the urban core. And so they basically have been put on the fringe of the community so that they can build these tiny homes. And these tiny homes provide them with jobs. It's really a sustainable model, but they've been pushed to the outside. And then that all comes down to what it takes to build that community. It was supposed to take city, county, and nonprofit to build that. And what we really saw was nonprofit not being able to collaborate at such a level to get this community in a spot of high economic opportunity or choice. I think at the beginning of the hour, Zach really hit the nail on the top of the head that said affordability comes with, goodness gracious, I'm losing my train of thought, but really it comes down to collaboration, and it really comes down to a level of trust. And how do we repair and build trust in a town that has historically been there's been a level of distrust among city, community, nonprofits? Because nonprofits, if you know anything about Tucson, you know that nonprofits pretty much control a lot of power and conversations in Tucson. And so how do we replicate that? Kind of like we saw how it didn't work in San Antonio and Austin. How do we replicate that here?
On that note, just to kind of keep bringing this to the ground level, in Tucson, so when I left, and I still feel this way in many regards, when I left Tucson last week, a lot of my mind was based on, look, some basic affordability is created when you get supply and demand balanced correct, right? And it turned out that Ben Bueller Garcia and Isaac Figueroa last week on the show, when they stood in for me on, I think it was Thursday, talked about this, that a lot of communities around the country are restricting certain kind of development. San Francisco has been an example of this. Create urban growth boundaries, restricted development. You've got, you know, for example, 100,000 people wanting to move in and only homes for 50,000 people, right? Demand goes up, supply either stays the same or goes down, and then that's what brings prices up. And so to one degree, and again, I'm still here, is, you know, we need to be figuring out how to be supporting or incentivizing good development, which is more supply, to keep prices where they need to be. The only challenge that I'm seeing is a lot of the new development in Tucson is still kind of at the higher end of what they call MFI, median family income. And we're creating more supply, but it's not necessarily creating supply that is accessible to our workforce in Tucson. And what we're seeing in bigger cities is when, you know, our workforce is not able to find housing that works with their budget, then you start to see, you know, an exodus.
Yep.
And then the business community just kind of staggers as a whole. And so what we heard is that if the business development and public sector are not collaborating on figuring out how to create housing for everybody who needs it, then you're creating more supply, but you're not really solving the problem. So affordability doesn't necessarily solve displacement.
Yeah. So Zach was one of the moments of shook. I'm going to say I was shook a little bit.
Okay.
During this trip, there was two times where that actually happened, but one of them was when we started to debrief about neighborhood choice. And we started to talk about how many of our friends actually live in Tucson. And what we found is that most of our young adult, young professional friends do not live in Tucson. They live on the fringe of Tucson. They live mostly in Oral Valley,
Vail.
Talking
city proper versus...
Yeah. And so that shook me. But another thing that shook me was a 23-year-old barista who was talking about gentrification and displacement in his community. And he was working at one of the poshest coffee shops that we had seen in our whole trip. And he started to tell me this lay of the landscape of how a few years ago, he was 19 years old, still kind of living with his parents. His parents got multiple offers to sell their home. After they sold their home, there was an agreement between whoever purchased the home and the family that their son could live there in this transition time. And they were thinking it would be a 2 to 3 year transition time. And that investor came in and sold the house in less than 6 months. And he then had to go through this process of couch surfing. But really, it comes down to that generation priced out. There is going to be a whole generation of people that aren't going to necessarily be able to purchase homes. And so when we think about that as future planning, we really must create density. We must create anything other than the single family American dream, because that's essentially where a lot of our heads are stuck at. They're stuck in that single family home that they can put the white picket fence in front of, but that's not sustainable long term. And Tucson really doesn't have the space to do that if we consider just infill and staying around the most urban parts of town.
You know, I mean, it's interesting because I think we have to be clear that this goes beyond any kind of preference or even a generational thing. Mathematically, I was struck by, I mean, Arizona is the fastest growing state in the country. I mean, you're having hundreds of people move to Phoenix. By the way, Phoenix has an eviction rate that's about as high as New York City. So, you know, it's not just a type of city that is facing housing issues. You're seeing this across the country. But I think something that stood out to me is even with the land trust model that we see in Tucson, it's very single family oriented, and it's designed for long-term residency, which sounds good and is good, but we have 1.5 months of housing supply in Tucson as it is. We have less than 3,000 units on the multiple listing service, and part of the reason is because there's a lot of staying in place and our supply isn't turning over. I think what I came away with from being in Texas is we can't solve this American problem with single family building.
True.
There's just not enough land, just too many people, just not enough possibilities to do that. This is going to have to be an infill conversation, a density conversation, a multifamily development conversation. And density doesn't have to mean poverty. And that's a stereotype I run up against all the time.
Yeah, we heard that a lot in Austin. And they've gotten to that point where they eventually were just like, okay, density is fine. But it felt like at the beginning, a lot of their conversations, people were assuming, and it's a lot of those people who own their homes, they figured density equaled poverty and poverty equals others or people of color, when really density means more affordable options. Density means people, less transient communities. It really shapes what community should look like.
And by the way, density does not mean necessarily these massive towers and 10, 15 stories, right? Tucson's definition of density right now is 3 buildings per acre, you know, like 3 units per acre.
Yeah.
So when we talk about density, we're talking about how do we maximize the space that we have to provide more options to more people. You know, the difference between where we are today as a community and I think where people's concerns go is there's a massive gap in there, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I feel like there are some practical solutions for what we want to see in the future. We want to see more homogenous communities. We want to see people who are moving here who are economically diverse. We want to see diversity in just about every spectrum. And so I don't want to jump too much into the where are we at? How do we fight back against displacement? I want to focus on where we are at the moment and who needs to be at the table, because we really have figured, I think we're starting to figure out who needs to be at the table and how can we encourage them to be there and show up often enough to get some good solutions.
So to wrap up, as cities grow, like Tucson is growing, it often faces two problems. It faces a lack of accessibility to affordable housing, right? Not not Section 8 even, just if you make $50,000 a year, can you get into a home, right?
Yeah.
That's affordable. And then also, can communities that have been in place stay in place? I want to talk a little bit of policy when we get back, right?
Okay,
what are some things as we wrap up that Tucson can do to stay ahead of that problem that every major American city is facing? We'll do that when we come back from the break. Don't go away, Tucson. Tucson, welcome back to the program, the Creative City Show here on 1030 The Voice. We talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future and debate and discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting us there. And certainly most American city is struggling with and failing, if we're honest, or not quite yet getting to success, if we're going to be optimistic optimistic on the issue of housing in communities. In fact, the United States as a whole has underreached, I think, 30-35% of its potential gross domestic product since the 1960s because it hasn't figured out how to get its housing stock right in high productivity areas. So making sure that we have housing, all kinds of housing for all kinds of people is important to community, not just as an issue of an issue of particular interest, but in terms of community. This is a workforce issue. This is an economic issue. And cities, including ours, are struggling to make the right decisions. I'm with Andres Portela from the Southwest Fair Housing Council. He and I were in San Antonio and Austin last week to do kind of a study tour and see what those cities have been working on. Austin in particular is a community that many say Tucson could be like. And indeed, Austin about 20 years ago was Tucson. And so it's been interesting to look at that city as a kind of 20-year look back from the future to see what we want to strive for, but what we also want to be careful of. What are some of the kind of nitty-gritty things that our community could and should be working on, Andres, that you feel we walked away in hand with?
So before I even go into that, I'm going to say that Austin and San Antonio, and specifically I'll talk about Austin right now, it took them 5 years of planning, 5 years of education. And I think that's a component that we really have to focus on. We have to talk about this duality of choice and place. So choice is everything that gets me into that that I want to live in. So if I want to live in a specific community, I have that choice. And this is something we've also talked about in the past. Choice, there has to be a education program centered around neighborhood choice. I think that a lot of people know where they want to live. They just don't know how to get into where they live. And so if we, understanding that there are a ton of home buyers programs out of Pima County, the city of Tucson does home buyers classes. But I just feel like a lot of people don't know about them. And so when we talk about choice, there has to be I don't want to say rebrand, but there has to be a brand from local government with the assistance of nonprofits that says these programs are available to people, and they have to actually know about it. And so when we start talking about choice, we also have to talk about place. What is the way we can prevent displacement and keep people in place? And I heard a few strategies that I think could prevent eviction, but also prevent displacement. I thought it was very great that they had funds allocated, and I think the the money that's required for affordable housing is a drop in the bucket. So they have that $200 million bond. But what one thing that Zach and I asked was, what would it take to cure the affordable housing crisis? And they were like $11 billion, and that's extremely daunting. But that's their reality. They only have $200 million and $1 billion total out of all of these bonds. So they've allocated those funds to legal assistance and representation, emergency rental assistance from the city. They've also gone to identifying communities most vulnerable to displacement. They've gone to utility assistance, motivated by data, looking at those communities that may need some assistance long term. Because our reality is, and I think this is a national reality, is most people are $1,000 away from being evicted, or $1,000 medical bill away from being in poverty. And so when we really start looking at solutions, we have to understand our reality. Our reality is that people do not have either the financial capital or the education to understand what is actually available to them. And so I believe that Tucson could focus on rental utility assistance corridors with goals for affordable housing, but also equity and transportation. I think one thing that I'm starting to love about Tucson is these scooters. And I didn't love the scooters too much when they first hit the streets about 3 weeks ago. But what I'm starting to see is they could potentially open doors to communities on the fringe of Tucson and allow people to have alternative ways for transportation.
Yeah, I think I came away with some tactical things. I think it's a lot of education as well. So for example, if you are are a senior on a limited income in Tucson, there's certain resources available to you that cap property tax increases, that if you live in a historic area, that you can utilize that to cap property tax and assessment increases. There's a lot of things that people don't know about that help, especially our older community, stay in place. And that's a community that we don't talk about a lot on this issue that's probably the most affected, is kind of that older, retired, fixed income senior that lives in a lot of our parts of town that are really an at-risk population. So education is a huge piece of this.
Yeah, and we start to see a lot of people come through Southwest Fair Housing Council specifically focused on their disability tied to their age. We are finding that a lot of these evictions that we see, Pima County put out those numbers about a year ago that said 16,000 people are evicted. And so when we think about that, a lot of it is tied to source of income, which is why we feel why I personally feel that source of income protections could be a great first step. And all that basically means is if you have the means to pay for a unit, it doesn't matter where that money is coming from. If you can pay for it, you should be able to use it. What we find now is a lot of these evictions are tied to housing providers not necessarily wanting to take those housing choice vouchers, those Section 8 vouchers, a nonprofit that is stepping in and paying someone's rent. That would be a great short-term goal. And a lot of states have already done that. A lot of states have baited this program of allowing source of income protections in their fair housing ordinances. Tucson right now, they have age as an extra additional protected class, sexual orientation, gender identity, and age. But most people do not understand that there are some local protections included under the Fair Housing Act, which are just 7 of the protected classes.
I think, Andres, let's wrap up this way because our time is quickly closing. I came away when it comes to building more units, building more affordability in, helping our at-risk population stay in place. Here's what I walked away with for Tucson. I don't think, and this is me being, I think, relatively pro-growth and development, pro-smart growth, right? Pro-markets. I don't think that the market is built to solve this problem on its own.
True.
I also don't think that the public sector is able in Tucson, and maybe just in general, to solve this problem.
I don't think it's big enough yet.
On its own. And it's not big enough yet. I think in Tucson, this has to be a public-private conversation. We need to support and allow our development community to increase supply. Our public sector needs to put opportunities and incentives in place to make sure that affordability is built into that. I go back to the Austin scenario. We're not in a place, maybe we should never be, right? This is our argument, to do a $250 million bond, right? I don't think you can bond and program your way out of this. I think it has to be a collaboration of supply, but also equity and affordability. And I think that's public and private together. I don't think Tucson's big enough to have one of those two groups do it all on their own. 2 minutes, agree or disagree?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I just don't think that we have the mediator to do that. At this moment, we don't have someone kind of in the middle who could be also pro-development, but also pro-communities. Right now, we have a lot of people who sit on the fringe with their camera phones out and is like, ooh, something's about to happen between community and developers. But also there has to be that handout between community, because what we see, and I'm not going to speak for Zach, I'm going to speak for myself. What I see is a lot of community groups saying that they do not want to work with developers. They do not want to understand their space. And from a developer standpoint, why would they? Every time they try to propose something or a new development, it's immediately quashed without understanding the importance or the amount of space needed for that. We've seen this a lot with housing developments in particular communities. They say, not in my backyard. They say this is not one of those things that they want for them. And so just to really understand that there has to be that level of communication and collaboration.
100%. I've been saying that on this show for months, maybe years.
Well, I said it. So it's two people now.
There we go. we need more. that we need to have that mediated somehow conversation. We didn't get to hit on this, but your big takeaway, I think, Andres, is that the nonprofit community, the public sector, and the private sector are very siloed, and they have to be in collaboration to solve this issue. That's our next conversation, probably for another day, because we're out of time. But it was great traveling with you and great exploring, and I think we'll put out, as we continue to synthesize this, some more information on it, because we talked some big ideas today, but there's a lot we can do on the ground
definitely.
As well. Andres, Andres Portela, Southwest Fair.
Thanks for having me.
Housing Council. Thanks for coming on. The CEO of the Insulin Initiative, a startup working on insulin and diabetes issues in Tucson, a great startup in our community, is coming in tomorrow. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship and innovation in Tucson. Exciting stuff. 9 a.m. tomorrow. This has been the Creative City Show with your host, Zach Yenser, signing off. See you tomorrow.